Hi, everyone. Welcome to Flock Talk. I'm Erin Morgan.
And I'm Tom Lewis.
And we work for the farmer members of the Ontario Sheep Farmers Organization.
This week, the topic is research, and we will be interviewing Charlotte Winder, veterinarian, associate professor, population medicine at Ontario Veterinary College.
Welcome, Charlotte.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you're doing at the OVC?
So in my role at OVC, I do a couple of different things. So on the teaching side, I work in our ambulatory practice, so kind of a regular farm service practice where we see sheep producers as well as dairy cattle, beef cattle, and goats as well. We take our final year veterinary students for clinical training. I also teach more specific rotations in their final year that focus on small ruminants. And as well, I do a fair amount of teaching that are lecture and lab based in earlier years that focus on sheep and goats. I also have a research program that has originally focused primarily on dairy cattle, but recently received some funding to do some work in sheep that I'm excited to share with you today.
So can you tell us a little bit about your work in pain management in ruminants and what you've learned that would help sheep producers?
Oh, for sure. So a lot of the work that I've done previously in pain control has focused around painful procedures. So specifically, we've looked at a lot of stuff in disbudding in calves. But in general, looking at pain control work, what we've certainly found is it's pretty clear that whenever we can do something to prevent pain ahead of a procedure, it's much, much more beneficial than giving something later. And when we're talking about pain control for diseases, obviously we don't know if an animal is going to get sick, but if we can give pain control early in that process, it's going to be much more effective than giving it later. So if an animal, say a ewe has a really difficult lambing and we know probably that's maybe going to be painful later, instead of waiting for there to be an issue a couple days down the road, maybe getting some pain management into them right after, you know, a lambing where we had to use a lot of maybe traction to get lambs out, giving her pain control right away, stopping that inflammation before it happens can be way more effective. The other thing actually that we've learned in one of the most recent disbudding studies, which I think has really interesting consequences, is just how impactful kind of the whole picture is. So not just pain management, but we also looked at the role of nutrition in healing and also pain sensitivity. And it was really remarkable the impact of good nutrition on how animals felt and how they healed. So I think this obviously has, you know, bearing everywhere that probably looking at the whole picture is really important. So for sure, if something happens where we would maybe want to give pain management, or we have, you know, a procedure that's happening routinely, like tail docking, where we might want to consider pain control, also looking at that whole picture. So if management is really good and our nutrition program is good and those lambs are healthy and vigorous at birth, it's likely also going to impact their experience of painful procedures, and they're probably going to heal better and have a better experience, even just with kind of good management from a holistic standpoint.
Wow, that's really interesting. So if you are a producer and you want to, you know, take some advice from this, working with a nutritionist, or what would your steps be?
Yes, I think definitely working with a nutritionist is going to be a great step. For sure, sometimes with, you know, really small flocks, maybe that's a little bit of a challenge to get started. But I think, you know, nutritionists have a huge wealth of information that can be shared with you and is very practical. And even really small flocks, I think that especially maybe in really small flocks, it's important to talk to a nutritionist to make sure that whatever feeding program you have is going to be useful, because that just impacts so many things. So for sure, I mean, from the pain control side, I mean, it's impacting animals' experiences of those conditions, but obviously more broadly than that, you know, it's going to impact everything on the productivity and health side. So I think for sure, if there's anybody listening that isn't working with a nutritionist so far, you know, calling around, finding out, working with someone that's interested in small ruminants is, I think, such a great tool to have.
So can you tell us about some of the clinical teaching opportunities vets must engage in with small ruminants before becoming a vet?
Oh, for sure. So sheep are one of the primary species that we have in the curriculum here, which is great. So as early as the beginning of vet school, one of their main courses in first year is anatomy, and they do dissections. And sheep are, they do horses and cattle, but sheep are also one of the species that they look at too. So it's definitely included in part of the curriculum from the start. We give them clinical training as early as in first year. Most of the teaching that I do in the curriculum is kind of the clinical or hands-on stuff. So as early as their first year, we do labs in handling and restraint. So how to appropriately, you know, catch and restrain sheep and do a basic physical exam. And I think this is one of my favorite things to teach because all the students have to go through this, not just the students that have already an interest in production animals. And I think giving them exposure to sheep early in vet school is really good because a lot of the students really love those labs. I think for students that maybe haven't had as much exposure to production animals or larger animals, it can be a little bit intimidating at first. And I think working with sheep is a really nice introduction because I don't think there is quite as much fear perhaps as working with cattle for students that don't have that background. You know, maybe there's not going to be too many students that enter vet school that have never seen a sheep before that graduate wanting to work with sheep, but there might be some. And I think having that early exposure is really important. Going forward, it's certainly part of their curriculum, both kind of the theoretical side and the practical side. In their third year, they get to start taking some electives. So we do a health management elective in small ruminants. So definitely focused on kind of flock level management and working with flock level issues. So kind of how to work up problems maybe with like lamb mortality or, you know, poor lamb growth, maybe issues with wasting in adult animals. So they have that opportunity. And then in their final clinical year, we offer for sure with our ambulatory clinic, we see small ruminants. But then we have more specific rotations dedicated to small ruminant health management. And one that was started a number of years ago now by Dr. Paula Menzies that focuses on neonatal care of lambs. And so, yeah, those have been going on for many years. And hopefully by that time we have, you know, generated some interest and students are wanting to take those rotations. And they're generally very, very popular with our final year students.
So tell me a little bit more about the exposure the students get. Do they take other extracurricular activities when it comes to sheep farming?
Yeah, so our students have a student club that's generally called the Food Animal Club, where they plan different extracurricular experiences with lots of different production animal species. And I work as their faculty advisor, so I'm fairly tied into all the things that they're doing. So there is a lot of interest in small ruminants there. And through that club, do things that maybe we don't have time to do in the curriculum. So in the past, they've organized things like farm tours to see different types of production systems. Actually, today, after this podcast, I'm going to take a group of them up to our research flock, and they're going to do some pregnancy diagnosis. So students are excited to do that. And also, I think they finished their classes last Friday. So these are students that stuck around just to go preg check sheep. So that's awesome. And I think beyond that too, in their final year, especially when they take, they can stream. And in their final year, if they stream a food animal, they also have a lot of opportunities to spend time away from OBC, which is also really good for their training, to get like a diversity of experiences and opinions. So a lot of the students will go and find experiences with small ruminant producers elsewhere.
So here's another question. If we want to attract more vet students to work with small ruminants, do you have any advice for us?
Yeah, so I think there's lots of things that already exist, which are great opportunities for students. So I guess the CE opportunities that Ontario Sheep Farmers provides, historically, a lot of our students have gone and attended those and definitely have felt well received. And I think those are really good opportunities, not just for training for our students, but also to immerse themselves in the industry, make connections with producers and leaders in the industry. So I think, highlighting those opportunities, and we always try to pass those along to students to kind of give them information about it. So that's been great. On farm, I think, hopefully producers have good relationships with their existing vets. But I think there's lots of opportunities to engage with your vet in a proactive way. And I think sometimes that can be really beneficial on both ends. So, I think sometimes it's a lot, maybe more commonplace that, you know, something goes wrong, we're having an issue for sure. Maybe we want to contact the veterinarian and help us maybe work through a problem that's happening. But potentially, you know, ahead of maybe big management changes or, you know, considering, you know, maybe considering expanding, maybe sourcing, new animals. I think for the most part, veterinarians are really interested in having those discussions, especially being involved and, you know, getting your veterinarian's thoughts and, you know, maybe any concerns they might have ahead of making large scale changes, I think can be really helpful. Engaging with your veterinarian and having discussions, maybe, you know, doing some looking at previous records, maybe having a talk about, you know, if something maybe wasn't optimal this year, how things can be improved for the next cycle. I think that can go a long way to building a good relationship.
Thanks, Charlotte. So we've been really working hard to think of ways to encourage students to go into small ruminant practice. And you've given us lots of hope that students are looking at working with small ruminants and enjoying their classes. And that's fantastic. Do you get a sense that students might want to go and practice in rural and northern Ontario?
Yeah, I think, I guess I'm always optimistic. I think one of the kind of general challenges veterinary medicine is facing right now is the fact that we, you know, don't have enough vets in general in all aspects of practice. And I think going into small animal practice, kind of the divide there between, you know, practicing in a rural community, maybe doing mixed practice or production animals, kind of the difference between that and maybe working at a small animal clinic in a large city, it's just becoming more and more lucrative to do the latter there. That being said, what I've seen is I think that's impacting vet students that are kind of on the fence. They maybe want to do mixed practice. They're interested in production animals, but for maybe financial reasons or other reasons, they're going to tend towards small animals. However, there's always kind of a core group of students that's never going to sway them, no matter what the difference is. And I think that's really encouraging. And I think among that group of students, I'm definitely seeing a lot of them that are interested in, you know, they don't just want to look at dairy cattle. They want to work with a variety of livestock industries. They have an interest in small ruminants. And like, for example, this year, we have only 7 students in our whole class that are in the food animal stream, which is a little low, but all of them have signed up for our small ruminant electives in fourth year. All of them are really interested in that. And I think all of them are going to become like really proficient, you know, food animal practitioners as a whole, and are going to be interested in working with sheep producers and knowledgeable in that area. So in addition, practicing in more remote communities like Northern Ontario, again, it's maybe a small number. Certainly there are students, we have a student this year who had an externship experience in Northern Ontario and certainly wants to go back there and is looking for employment up there. And we've had that in the past. So I think, again, like having exposure to those communities, they might be a little bit more remote. And if students aren't from there, they're maybe not familiar with it. But once they have those experiences, I think then they start to understand, you know, all the benefits. And sometimes it's a really excellent fit for people that might not be from those communities themselves.
That's awesome. Uh-huh. Can you tell our listeners about the failure of passive transfer project that you have planned? We know you're in the early stages and don't have any results. However, is there anything you can share with us?
Oh, for sure. We're just doing some pilot work right now. And then hopefully the project will be completed in 2024 and then results coming thereafter. So we have a PhD student, Jasmine Fraser, who just started with us in September. So she'll be working on the project. She was really excited to work on a sheep project, which is great. So again, additional training for people that are interested in working in the sheep industry aside from DVMs. And she has experience previously working on a sheep dairy. So that got her really interested in the project. So the goal with this project is to look at failure of passive transfer in lambs. So basically lambs that didn't receive enough immunoglobulins, so antibodies from their dam. And so this could be because they maybe didn't consume enough colostrum, maybe they didn't consume it fast enough after birth, or maybe the colostrum quality wasn't there. And we can also have kind of another impact of consuming colostrum that maybe has, you know, bacterial contamination. So if we have kind of dirty teats, or if lambs are consuming bacteria in another way, so, you know, maybe they're not able to access the udder right away, they get some manure in their mouth. If they ingest any bacteria ahead of drinking colostrum, that impacts their ability to absorb it too. So kind of lots of different factors that are involved with that. And then that can have a really big impact on lamb performance. in cattle and also in goats, there's fairly well established ways to detect this. So taking blood on neonatal animals, checking for how much protein is in the blood. This can be done on farm. So fairly easy way to investigate maybe a problem with, you know, poor performance or mortality. But the challenge in sheep is we don't really have the research to show us what those cut points should be. Part of this work is to establish that. So we're going to work with a commercial flock that's with a prolific breed, kind of accelerated lambing cycle. And that's specifically because this problem is certainly likely to be more of an issue in those breeds on those production cycles compared to maybe a breed that is on an annual lambing cycle with, you know, smaller litter sizes. So we're going to be looking at antibody levels in the blood for these lambs, and then looking at kind of what levels correlate to lowered mortality and better performance. So the goal there is to have a number that can be used by veterinarians and producers when kind of working up these problems. The other part of it is to look at what are the factors that go into causing that failure of passive transfer. And so we're going to look at kind of a lot of factors leading up to lambing. So factors on the ewe side that have been looked at before, but I think from the research standpoint, we need more information because there's a lot of variation and some of that might be from breed and management. So kind of getting more data to kind of better establish, can we predict what lambs are going to have this problem? And then in our second year of the study, to be looking at the impact of supplementation for those lambs. So one of the other challenges with colostrum issues in lambs is that, you know, for sure, if we know which lamb is more at risk and we can help that lamb, you know, nurse sooner or, you know, provide colostrum by stomach tube, we can make sure that that gets in right away. Or if we know there's risk factors that we can change, like, you know, doing things to increase birth weight, things like that. But one of the challenges also is, you know, a lot of times we might use colostrum replacer, which is certainly a really good tool. But one of the challenges is they're all bovine derived. So they don't have antibodies that are specific to sheep. And so not to say that that's a problem, because certainly, you know, that's going to get, like, for sure, that's going to get the right nutrition into the animal. Is there cross protection with those antibodies? What we were going to look at in our second year of the study is once we identify some factors that are kind of predicting what lambs are going to be more at risk, we're going to see what the impact of supplementation is on those lambs, both on their antibody levels, which is maybe a little bit theoretical, but then also practically on, do those lambs do better? So in some cases, I mean, they might be doing better than lambs that aren't supplemented just because they get more calories early, or maybe there's an impact with antibody levels too. But yeah, that's kind of our goal for the project. So it'll be over 2 years, but hopefully we'll have lots of data from a lot of lambs. We're hoping to enroll about 250 to 300 ewes in this study, and then all of their lambs. So hopefully we'll be able to chat with you in a couple of years and share our results with you.
Well, thank you, Charlotte, for taking the time to speak with us today. It's been most informative and certainly positive information to hear.
And thank you for listening. Join us next Wednesday for our marketing-themed interview with Matthew Rowe, Canadian Campaign for Wool.
So, Aaron, tell me what's new.
OSF is working with our partners in the Ontario Agricultural Sustainability Coalition, Grain Farmers of Ontario, Beef Farmers of Ontario, Ontario Fruit and Vegetable Growers, Ontario Pork, and Veal Farmers of Ontario, to increase the province's investment in the risk management program. Sheep farmers have a static portion of the existing funding envelope, and enrollment in RMP in 2023 by sheep farmers has increased by 18%. The total pounds of lamb production enrolled in the program has grown from 4.5 million in 2020 to over 8 million enrolled in 2023. Our organization is very concerned with farmer confidence in this very valuable program if payment prorations continue to worsen. OSF is working with our OASC partners to increase the government contribution to the risk management program by an additional $100 million.
Tom, what's new? What have you been working on?
So we've been working on the creation of the Sheep Institute. This idea came from the Membership Crossroads Challenge in 2021. We've had the budget to launch the new Sheep Institute in 2024. OSF is currently in the stage of gathering all the resources we have accumulated over a number of decades and a lot of work on the back end. When we launch it, it will include research and results of research projects. It will also include multimedia, which we have available on YouTube, podcasts, and articles. And the best part is it'll be organized by subject. It will include all courses currently offered by Ontario Sheep, as well as what we're adding this year in terms of grazing certification and the wool workshop modules. We hope to have more information for you in the months ahead. And if you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe through your podcast app to receive alerts to future episodes, and please share our podcast with your friends.
For more Ontario Sheep Farmers content, follow us on social media at Ontario Sheep Farmers on Instagram and Facebook, and at Ontario Sheep on X, formerly Twitter, and visit our website at ontariosheep.org.